This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
We want to talk a little bit about lasers, and I had to pick a sketchy title. So, can lasers fix teeth? And we will talk about the mouth and about some gum stuff and so on. And in the beginning, I like to give disclosures. And so I have no financial relationship to any company that manufactures or distributes a product discussed in this presentation. And I'd like the other way around too. I have no relationship to a company whose products compete or may compete with a product discussed in this presentation. But I have a lot of different research money, and all that research money goes right through UCSF contract and grants and never comes right to me. So it's all under view what's happening. So I like to welcome always people when I talk about lasers to the wonderful world of laser dentistry, where we can do surgery without bleeding. In my former life, 21 years, I was an oral surgeon. And why did I pick a scalpel or why did I pick a laser later on? Because I liked the idea to do work without bleeding. And so here you see a frenum, and that sits here in between the teeth of a young kid, and that prevents those teeth to come back together. So you take a laser and take it off. And that is how it is. There is no bleeding because the heat of the laser, even if it's a very small heat, closes the blood vessels, and it also closes the nerve endings. And that's the reason why patients who get oral surgery with a laser don't feel pain afterwards. There's no bleeding while me as a surgeon doing the cut. And afterwards, when the anesthetic is gone, there's no pain. So this is really interesting. In the beginning, I didn't believe that. So I treat a lot of patients and get them back next day and ask them, so how is it? Was there pain? I cut things out later on this size. No pain. Okay, sure. Yeah, sure. And this is healing after 1 week. And with lasers, drilling without a drill. And I will tell you later on when that dream came true and why that dream suddenly could come true somewhere around 1995, not before that. And one of my basic research areas was, can I prevent cavities? Can I do something before drilling even needs to be done? And when I moved to here, 14 years ago, to the dental school, now Dean Featherstone, he was the guy at that time who was working on this for years, and I was working on this, and I invented things how to cut teeth, and the caries goes away, and when there's healthy tooth structure, nothing is happening. So selective caries removal. This all is based on 1916 with this friendly guy who had that idea how he could create laser light. But that was a time he couldn't build one thing. So he could theoretically do the quantum theory and all that, but he couldn't build a laser. That was actually more than 50 years later that someone, T.H. Maiman, built the first laser, actually 1965. So I don't know. Who is using a laser at home? Actually, I bet everyone is using a laser because you most probably have a CD player or you have a DVD player. Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Inside there sits a laser. And when you go to Safeway and they scan your barcode, they're using a laser. So lasers are everywhere now. But what's the big difference between lasers and this light up there, or the light which is shining in my eyes so I can't see you very well? So the regular conventional light sources, there's the light bulb, and those things mean waves, and they're all different wavelengths. So out of these light bulbs up there, there's red light coming out, blue light coming out, yellow, whatever. It all comes together and forms white. So white is a combination of all colors, and that's happening in the light. What can you do with that? Yeah, put it in my eyes. Or use it in a car on a flash lamp where you get it into one direction, but that's mainly it. What's the difference with a laser? Out of a laser, only one wavelength is coming out, only one color. So out of my blue laser here in this pen, it's only blue coming out. And actually, it sits another laser in there, and out of that laser, only red is coming out. But that's it. There are not different colors with the laser. The next interesting thing is there are two blue coming out, but they look very different, and they go in different directions. But out of a laser, they all look the same. They all go parallel. They all go really straight forward. That has a name. One light is called monochromatic. So laser light is monochromatic, only one color coming out. They're coherent. They go in phases, top with tops and bottoms with bottoms. Do you remember from physics what that means? It can't transfer energy. So it's not irradiating energy, it transfers energy. So that's the trick with the laser. It can transfer energy. And the beam is really collimated, means really parallel. And you can send a beam from the Earth to the Moon. That's roughly 250,000 miles. And that will be spread only to 2 miles. So it's really not divergence, it's very parallel. And actually, they sent a beam light 6 million kilometers, that's roughly 4 million miles, and they saw it in Galileo, 4 million miles away, they could detect that light. Do we use that specific thing, that everything is so parallel in dentistry? Not really, because our caries, our cavities are relatively speaking big. So the tiny things you use in the computer industry, where you cut chips with lasers, where you do nanometer things. In dentistry, you just use that you transfer energy with the laser. Now, the next 2 slides, I want to take away, for you at least, the magic. What is so magic with lasers? How can you create a laser? Actually, it's very, very simple. Albert had a very simple idea, and these are typically the best, as you know. So this is an atom, and there's a center, and there's an electron. That's one way to show atoms and electrons. There are tons of different ways to show them. And here is a quantum of light, one wavelength. And that must be a little bit specific, but that's all. And then they like each other, and this is absorbed in that electron, and that electron comes up to a higher stage of energy, and there it has it, and it sits there, and that's called photon absorption. So if that thing sits there, it doesn't stay there forever. It stays there for a very short period of time. The electron comes down on its own, and it emits that same photon again. And that's called, because that happens spontaneously, spontaneous photon emission. Well, that's the first step. So let's do the next one and say here it is again. Here's our photon again. It gets again absorbed, but before it spontaneously drops down, we come with a second photon. And that second photon forces that electron to come down. And now it's a stimulated photon emission because we stimulate that thing to come down. And we get 2 photons. And now remember, they have the same wavelength. They go totally parallel. Top goes with top and bottom goes with bottom. And that's the definition of laser light. So that's the way, the simple way how you create laser light. Get one very excited. Come on, let's get excited. Then force that thing to come down before it does it on its own. And then you get the stimulated photon emission. And that's the definition of laser. Because this is a light amplification. We get 2 now. By stimulated emission of whatever comes out is a radiation. It's light or whatever. So laser stands for light amplification, stimulated emission, radiation. That's it. Simple as that. So, sorry, no magic. Magic is gone. Laser is simple. This is actually 1 year older than the first laser, but I saw that here on my first weeks in California, and then I figured out nowadays they're all out there, so they're really nice cars out there. So I would prefer a car over this laser here. Yeah, okay. So the next trick is now you want to build your own laser, because that will tell you how complicated that is. And honestly, it is not. We build our own systems for years. So you have to have the material where those electrons are sitting in there, where those atoms are sitting in there, and those electrons can come up. So you have to define a laser material. We talk about this just for a second. You have to put energy in there so that electrons really come up. You have to get them up. And then you have one mirror on one side and a really, really mirror on sale somewhere out of a shop where the light just goes half through. And then you create in here your laser light, lots of those wavelengths coming out with one color, reflecting between mirrors and getting out. And here inside, you can define what your laser really does. Which wavelength do you want to come out of that system? And that depends on what the material is. And we will talk about CO2 lasers. Actually, in the beginning, at the end of my talk, they're used for surgery, and nowadays they're used for very efficient cutting of teeth and very, very efficient changing enamel, the outer side of the tooth, to be more resistant against cavities. Then one of the first were those YAG lasers, yttrium aluminum garnet. That's actually a wonderful crystal you have somewhere in nice jewelry. And that's nothing else, a special crystal, and you excite inside the atoms. And there are the modern lasers, which have their task, like diode lasers, semiconductor lasers. So this here is a semiconductor laser. And the energy application to get all that stuff working. And you get laser light out in the visible range. I did a lot of research with laser light in the ultraviolet range, but it's not that good for skin, and actually in dermatology, they still do a lot of work with lasers in the ultraviolet because they get really precisely absorbed. And then you have lasers in the infrared, which are lasers I will show you where you the first generation of tooth-cutting lasers. And then those CO2 lasers, we talked about the gas and different wavelengths there because they are just tuned to different wavelengths. But at one point in time, only one wavelength is coming out of those lasers. You have to get the energy somewhere to the mouth after you built that system on the weekend at home. You went to Home Depot and bought a special gas, and you bought some cheap mirrors and a good mirror, or you stole the jewelry from your grandma. Ma, you don't need that anymore. Give it to me. You have to get that light somewhere to the mouth of your patient, or me, or whomever. And there are different ways. There are fibers, which are very flexible. And there are for lasers, which have a lot of energy to transmit. They are open hollow waveguides, or even arms with mirrors in the end, so the light reflects inside of the arm, and then it comes out for a handpiece and gets condensed. So this is one of those handpieces. And they're pretty precise, and different lasers. And why is that there? Most probably because I'm changing a little bit the topic. That's a nice view. Or I could say it's due to laser safety. So there's one point always, never get the light into your eyes because that's dangerous. Then you can't see this anymore. Yes, milady.
So I never understood what the roles of mirrors.
Oh. If we have some metal, and this is not a dangerous light here, I can get this somehow, but not really reflect it down to somewhere. The mirrors are really, the light, as we learned, it goes parallel. And then here's a mirror, and the light goes into that next tube. And here's a mirror, and the light goes into your handpiece. And those tubes are flexible at those corners, so you can get the light out of the machine right into the mouth of the patient. Was something really straight that would not work. So the mirrors just reflect the light to get to the handpiece.
So the mirror is not there for the application?
No, nothing. No, nothing. No, nothing. Just making sure that the light goes where you want it. And inside of the cavity, it helps to build the laser beam. But theoretically, you don't need one.
But so does the photon amplify by its own? So how?
by the trick that the atoms all get excited, and when they all come to that moment that one excites the next and so on, and the wavelength comes out, then you get your amplification. Okay? So when we get the light, the question is, we have it out of the machine, we decided which machine, which parts we are going to buy at Home Depot, what do we want to do at the weekend. Now, how does that really work? Why is this light not hurting my tissue, but with a little bit more energy, it could cut my tissue? So what are the options? Light can go through something that's called transmission. Will that do anything to any tissue? The answer is no, just go through, doing nothing. It can be reflected on the surface. Will that do anything to a tissue? No, it's getting reflected. So those two things are not doing anything. Only if the light gets absorbed in the tissue, so the incoming light gets transferred by absorption into another form of energy, then something happens. And in dentistry now we all agree, with all the lasers we are using, it's in the end a thermal effect. So the light coming in gets absorbed and gets transferred into heat. Not dangerous heat, but a little bit of heat, because that closes the blood vessels. Or heating up the water in enamel, and we talk about this, and the water will explode, and by that it takes pieces of enamel, and that's the effect of cutting into a tooth. So if it gets really good absorbed, the transfer rate is really high, and the effect is really, really high. And so then possible side effects, overheating something around, will not happen. So absorption is the key. When I started with lasers, actually I started in microanalytics. I was in an institute and worked as a dentist, as an oral surgeon, and my, let's say, godfather, whoever, said, well, you should do some analytics. There's a crazy guy out there that has an analytic machine and he uses a laser insight to hit a 3-micron spot in a tissue. And then that spot will be exploding, and then the atoms and everything will be accelerated, and then they fly, and then you know by the time how much time it takes them for 2 meters to fly, you know which atom weight that is, and then you know what element that is, and you know the composition. Okay, good, yeah. And then one day he says to me, Peter, you are a dentist. You have to think about things you can do with a laser. It's great that you do analytic stuff, but think ahead. And there it started. He got me infected doing research with lasers. But why I'm telling you that story? At that time, that was roughly 1984, we had no clue that absorption is the key. That took more than 10, 15 years to really, really figure that out. Now it's like, that's how it is. But the ophthalmologists knew that very, very early. And they used that. They used that the argon laser is not absorbed out here. It's not absorbed here in the eye. It's not absorbed here. It's absorbed in the blood vessels somewhere there back at the retina. And you typically, over the age of 65, 40% of the people will have the treatment that the retina wants to lose from the eye, and you do nothing else than weld that back with an argon laser. And I know at least one person in the room who had this already done before, and I don't know if anyone here got the retina put back with a laser. With a scalpel, you don't want to go into that eye and just work there. The excimer lasers are used to shape the front of the eye, so that the lens can bend differently. And that's for people who have very, very strong glasses, which are in the end this thick. So if you work out here and change the bending character, you don't need those thick glasses anymore. Some people don't need glasses at all anymore. So that's one of the things where the absorption only happens here, nowhere else. So absorption here or absorption here. And then some people develop over years sclerotic points in the eye. And they only see that when they're at the beach and looking at the sky, and they see a tiny dark thing swimming around. That's no problem. A lot of people have that. I never realized that. But if it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, you can't see anymore. And again, you don't want to open your eye bulb with a scalpel and take it out and put something in. Not really. So you take a laser which gets absorbed by that material, it blows it apart, and then it falls down here, and it gets somehow out of the eye, at least out of your reach. So with those techniques, you can see better those wonderful buildings here in San Francisco. Wonderful ladies. And we are at the soft tissue, so cutting with a laser without bleeding. And again, in the beginning, I was really not convinced. But, well, let me try and see. And this is my first removal. And I was trying to make that as clean as possible without getting it black. And you see, the tissue here is white. And why is that? Because the blood vessels which were going into that tissue were already closed. So there's no bleeding. There's no blood flow in that piece of tissue anymore. And so it's white. And that's when it's removed and without any cleaning. So this is a clean cut. It heals from the outside. After 1 week, it's very whitish. And after 2 weeks, it's closed. And it doesn't hurt because the nerve endings are also sealed. The only thing you have to tell your patients, don't eat spicy food. Because if you eat spicy food, well, it's not sealed like heck. So some pepper goes through, some salt goes through, and they say, oh, there's some pain. Yeah, well, you scratched your leg. Would you put salt and pepper on it? Yeah, if you want that feeling, you would do it. Okay, here's the phrenectomy we saw before, and we did a lot of that, and the kids love it. They love it for tons of reasons. Afterwards, there's no pain. They run around. And the typical advertisement in the beginning for lasers in soft tissue was the kid who goes into the pizza shop and has a piece of pizza after it got some surgery done. Yeah, it worked. It was good. This year is actually when I did so much with lasers, and I worked, as I said, in oral surgeon department at the university in Germany. The oral maxillofacial surgeons decided to send me cases because they heard, hey, you have a laser. And they sent me things like that, where something is growing and you see from the side. Typically we say what you see here is the tip of the iceberg. That thing goes deep in here. And yes, okay, I used a lot of energy because I really wanted to prevent bleeding. So I didn't care that I get a little bit black steak there. No bleeding is better. We put some ointment on. And this is just crazy. This is 2 weeks later. How does nature even know that this part is going to be white and this part is going to be red? This is, for me, still the magic. What does nature know about tissues and why are they repairing this way? Well, now we move to from soft tissue to hard tissue. Soft tissue was easy. Because soft tissue, if you create some heat, you close the vessels, you close the nerve endings, everyone is happy. If you create a little bit too much heat, well, it's going to be black. But that heals too. There's that bad phrase in the mouth, everything heals. Almost everything. But when you go to hard tissue, there's something very critical in each tooth. And that's actually the pulp. And that living tissue, tiny piece of tissue inside of each tooth, that's really temperature sensitive. And whatever rules you believe, heating it up by 5.5 to 6, 7, 8 degrees, that's the maximum this one likes. Above that, that pulp says, bye-bye, I'm leaving you, I'm dying now. And then the endodontics come in and do their treatment, perhaps somewhat later. So there are a lot of different things you can do nowadays with a hard tissue laser. And we will talk just for 5 slides what characterizes a laser you can use in hard tissue. You can do improving caries resistance. That's how this talk is going to end, because this for me is the most interesting thing. You learn already, I started as an oral surgeon, you take out teeth. Then I went into prosthodontics, you recover teeth. And now I'm more and more in just prevent caries. This is much more interesting and I think much more important over time. You can do things around the pits and fissures in the tooth. I started with the selective ablation of caries. That was my research for more than 10, 15 years. We will talk about how you cut with a laser without a drill. And you can do some more things. So, the surgery lasers, they are all typically continuous wave. What does that mean? All the time, something is coming out. And in some dental units, you have on the side a glass for the patient where he can take some water to swallow and spit it out, which is sometimes a disaster. Anyway, it's like, and there's a pump which pumps water in that glass until the glass is filled. But one guy has drilled a hole in there. So all the time that pump runs, something comes out. In terms of laser, all the time some of those electrons are really up there because you pump them constantly up to that higher excited stage, but some are always coming down. So some laser light is always coming out. And that's that symbol, something is coming out. But now you are bright. You close this up here. The pump really fills it up. That means that all your electrons, all those excited electrons, are sitting up there and waiting. When can we come down? And that's like a lock in your laser. And now you pull the plug, a lot of water comes out, all of them drop down, so we have a really strong beam. By strong beam, in the difference to a continuous wave laser, which has roughly 5 watts of energy, this is very low energy compared to light like this. A pulsed laser like this one here, this is one pulse, goes into the megawatts, can go into what a power plant produces, but they produce it continuously. But the laser produces that energy for many parts of a second, microseconds. So why is that so important? If you think about this as metal or a tooth, and you have a continuous energy burning down on that, then you will vaporize where the most energy goes in. Then you will melt, and then you have heat conduction. And does anyone have a clue at what temperature enamel, the outer side of the tooth, starts to melt? Give me a rough idea. Any rough idea? 100 degrees? 500 degrees? 800. 800 to 1,000 degrees. So if this here is 1,000, 800, 700, 600, 500, wait a second, I told you somewhere down here is the pulp, and that only allows 5 to 8 degrees. So with a continuous laser cutting a tooth, just kills the tooth. So that didn't work until the moment they figured out how to pulse lasers, how to get high energy coming out during microseconds. Then there is no heat conduction anymore. Then you ablate the material, and there's a tiny heat conduction, but it's so tiny it doesn't kill your pulp. And that was the trick. So you really go with the first generation of tooth-cutting lasers. You get absorbed in the water of the enamel. The enamel is that outer stuff, and inside of the tooth is the dentin, and then there comes the pulp. And the enamel has only 8% water. So you go with your energy in that 8% water, and it gets absorbed in that 8% water. And there are two lasers, actually. They get strongly absorbed in water. That's an absorption curve. You don't need to know that by detail. There's no test question later on. Or do we have a test? I don't know. Anyway, this is water, and these are wavelengths. This is the ultraviolet. The visible is just here, and that's the infrared. And those two erbium lasers are really strongly absorbed in water. These are the 8% water in enamel, the blue dots. And here comes our energy. I think we have to do that one more time. And the energy explodes the water because it heats it up to 400 degrees. That's an explosion. And the whole thing flies away. So that's the way the first safe laser for cutting teeth works. Still works. There are some roughnesses over here. And that is a little bit tricky later on. And that's a scanning electron microscopic picture where you see that roughness, but this is a tiny crater shot into enamel. And if you like art, that looks good on your living room wall, perhaps, or not. These are really tiny cuts. You almost can't see them if I wouldn't put the pointer there. These are micro cuts, roughly 400 micrometers, 0.4 millimeters. There's another one. You can really precisely cut. You can do minimal invasive dentistry if you want. And this is the clinical situation. Somewhere here is a tiny caries, and you can cut really a tiny cavity there and control that, put a filling in, and that's it. And this is a use of lasers on those canines where the tissue is already a little bit gone, and they are typically very sensitive when you use a drill. So why would you, as a dentist, use a laser to cutting tissue like this? Or why do patients prefer that someone drills with a laser? And my key answer in my first years was always, kids love it. I was treating kids with lasers on different areas. And I had made a contract with them. Like as an oral surgeon, you make a contract to say, if there's any pain, I will stop immediately. So give me a sign, you feel pain, I stop. Same with cutting teeth, and I had no clue. Is it really painless or it's lower pain? So I said, do we want to start cutting that tooth where we need to cut it, and here you see why we need to cut it and all that before? Should we start with the laser and don't put anesthetics on, or what do you want? No anesthetics, no shot. Okay, then let's start. But as soon as you feel something and want me to stop, you lift your hand to say, you do anything, I stop immediately. So I'm working, and I see a little bit movement. And I stop, say, you should stop me. No, it's okay. You mean it's really okay? Should we move on? Yeah, move on, okay? And we finish it, 2 minutes, 3 minutes working. And you always had the feeling, yeah, there is a little bit, but the kid didn't want to stop you. So when everything was done, I said, so now explain to me, what was going on? And the kids all told me later on, whenever that happened, they felt a little bit tiny needle pick. But it's so minimal that you just feel it and it's okay. I said, but I could give you a shot. No, it's so terrible with the shot. Everything is numb for hours. Everything is so bad. And I hate the needle sticking in. So you accepted a tiny needle in that teeth all the time, but you don't want that big needle coming. Yeah. And so we made more and more appointments, and it was even that interesting or bad or whatever. I said to my assistant always, I'm not good treating kids. And she said, yeah, doctor. And then I look at my schedule, and another kid, and another kid, and another kid. I said, how is that? Why do I have all those kids now? It's okay, but why? Yeah, because one kid told the other one and the family, and they're all coming because they knew that you will treat those teeth without hurting, and you would stop if you feel so. Oh, my God, yeah, you can't change that. You can't be that brutal, and no, don't do that. So that's now the topic that it makes sense. It's not really fast with the old first generation, but it's better to accept for specifically kids. They love it. And there's no question asked. In 2001, here at UCSF, Pam Den Besten helped FDA approval using those lasers in children. And as you see, you can do tiny cuts. You have to have a very tiny burr to do the same thing. But the burr, the vibration, that rumbling you feel, plus the pain you have to numb up, and with that you don't have to. So they got an FDA approval using erbium yak lasers on non-permanent teeth. That was the second one. And then I'm using this. It's a little lie. I say the sun came up. Well, that's in Hawaii. The sun goes down, but that's okay. Sun came up because we were asking over years, and John Featherstone for sure, how can I make teeth more caries resistant? How can I do that? And John is known as the fluoride pope, and fluoride does a lot, but fluoride needs compliance. Kids have to brush the teeth, kids have to do that, and so on. And could we have a technique where you do something, and that changes the enamel to be more caries resistant? The most important thing in the beginning for children are those fissures here. And this is already a tiny cavity. But that's, if you magnify that from the side, that's one of those tiny spots here. And that's the problem. It's very small. And so you can't get in there with an instrument to make it more caries resistant. So the dream was, can I use a laser, get the stuff out here, and also render this area more caries resistant? And that was the research question when I came here. And they were actually doing already some studies, and I will talk about. So, for that explosion laser in water, we have those erbiums I told you about. And they are highly absorbed. But here, down here, there is a wavelength, the CO2 laser, which is extremely high absorbed. And specifically wavelengths here at 9.6, they are strongly absorbed. And you remember, the higher absorbed, the better effect, the minimum side effect. So the trick now is that we are not absorbed with the CO2 laser in water anymore, we are absorbed in the mineral. Now we are absorbed in 85% of the structure, what the laser is going to see. So we get a much better defined ablation, cutting, removal, or just even changing the outer 100 microns or outer 10 microns, so 0.01 millimeters of enamel and make it more caries resistant. And I will tell you the trick. When John started all that, actually in New York, Rochester, he hates when I say this. This is John's life, 35 years in one slide. But he does the same thing with his, but he makes jokes out of his son. So he asked the guy in New York, Rochester, I know I need a CO2 laser because it's so highly absorbed. Whatever I figure out, that must be it. And the standard CO2 laser at that time was 10.6 micrometers. That's the length of the wave. And he said to this guy, I want actually all four basic wavelengths out of this laser. When I switch, I get the next. When I switch, I get the next. Because I think I have to melt the enamel rods. What's that? If you look on the microscopical level into enamel, it's all tiny rods, very tiny, micrometer thickness. And this is when you look at this. So look, tons of rods are looking at you. And he was thinking, I have to melt them. But 10.6, he never were able to melt. But 9.3, 9.6, 10.3, you see, that's fused. And so he thought, that's the trick. I have to fuse the enamel rods, and then they get more caries resistant. And that's part of the truth, actually. That was not wrong. So if you look at the absorption of those first generation enamel tissue cutters, you have whatever that number is, an absorption of 400, 500, 700. But if you look at the CO2s, the one where you can't melt with is 800, so that's higher. But those guys, you have 8,000 as an absorption. So very, very good absorption, very defined absorption. You need only tiny energies to do something. And what you do actually is use energy, and you see here's a temperature scale, and you hit the tooth with, that's an energy thing, joule per centimeter square, whatever that is, it's energy level, and it heats up to 400 degrees. You hit the tooth with 4 joules, it heats up to 800. Wait a second, 800? Didn't you say 800 is where melting starts? So between 800 and 1,200, whatever you believe, melting starts, and you need energies between 4 and 8 joules per square centimeter to heat it up, to melt. Now, if you crank up the energy, then it's so much that's above melting, and then you vaporize the tooth, you start to cut. Now, that's interesting. So I typically ask, when I present this, I ask dental students, I ask faculty, I ask everyone. I don't expect that you know the answer, but the question really is, what is enamel? And me, and I'm always guilty, I'm guilty with that. I learned as a student, enamel is hydroxyapatite. It's a specific crystal, hydroxyapatite. Well, you meet John Featherstone and you learn this is wrong. Enamel is actually carbonated hydroxyapatite. Means, in other words, it's a very dirty hydroxyapatite. The guy up there must have thought about dentist, because that carbonated group in the hydroxyapatite is that one which gets dissolved out first when acids come. That's where the cavities start. That's the problem. I don't know who designed that. There's a tiny flaw in the design. Can we go back and change that, please? But then we don't need dentists anymore. Well, tough love. So, you remember, 1, 2, 3, it heats it up, but not 800 degrees. 1, 2, 3, there is still that carbonated band if you do analysis of enamel. But if you come with 4, which heats it up to 800 degrees, those hills are gone. The carbonate is gone out of the enamel. You vaporize it out, you drive it out without actually changing it. When you start to melt, you change it a little and drive it out. But we have proved that you can even drive it out beyond melting. So that's the trick to make enamel caries resistant. Get rid of that dirty piece in the hydroxyapatite. Switch it back to really hydroxyapatite. So the regular mineral is carbonated. It's really soluble in acid. If you get the carbonate group out, we really have hydroxyapatite, which is much, much, much less soluble in acid produced by the bacteria starting the cavities. And if you throw in fluorite, then it's really getting fluorapatite, and that is really solid, several thousand times more solid than this or even this. So that's the whole thing. Drive out the carbonate, get some fluoride in, replace the thing, and suddenly you have a really stable enamel. And so the idea is really having a laser to cut if you need to cut, but the cut surfaces are already changed into more caries resistant. So when you put a filling in, the margins of the filling are much more caries resistant. And as you all know, if you go to a dentist and they check your fillings, and they say, oh yeah, I did that filling 2 or 3 years ago, but there's a new cavity at the margin, so I have to redo it. So we hope that you don't have to redo it that often, or perhaps never, or whatever. So I come here in 2001, and they were just doing the pulpit safety study with that specific laser, very short pulses, and they cut into wisdom teeth. And that's the original laser. It was used in dermatology, actually. That's actually really a two-pulse laser. Yes, 20 microseconds. You have one of those? Hey, we have one too. We always say it's a lady. We have to be very kind to the lady. Oh, so that the lady...
It's hard to maintain.
I know. That's exactly what I was saying. Let's be kind to the lady. The lady wants to work today? Okay, let's be very kind. Is that with all ladies? Okay. I can tell you this patient is still alive. So that's good, nothing happened. And in the whole summary is no damage to the dental pulp. They compared different teeth, they did a sham treatment, and so in the end, that laser is safe for the pulp. Then my beloved dean said, at that time my division chair, department chair, Peter, we did that all on pulled teeth and in the lab. You have to bring that into the clinics. You have to prove that it works in the clinics. So come up with an idea where we prove in the clinics that it really works on real patients, on alive patients, and not just in the lab. So we created a study where patients, for orthodontic reasons, had to get their bicuspid, their premolars, the small teeth here on the side, pulled so that there's enough space that the orthodontics person can push them all together. So I put this on here, this bracket, intentionally. I had too much glue because we were hoping, and we know that with kids who get brackets, they don't brush very well. So we hope that a lot of bacteria sitting down here, and they produce acids, and that will attack that enamel. And we were irradiating actually right to one side of that bracket, this area, with our laser, specific energies. And so this was the laser treated side, and this was actually my control after we pulled that tooth out, because it had to be pulled. And so then we cut that tooth, and then we were looking at those surfaces. And here is that metal bracket, and here's my thick fat composite. And you even see here the bacteria sitting around, and that's the enamel, that's the outside, that's this side here. And then we go deeper into the tooth, that's a dentin, and we do pressure. We put pressure on the enamel with pyramids, and we measure how wide the indentation is. And if a mineral is lost, that pyramid goes deep into the enamel, and the indentation is wide. And when the mineral is less and less lost, the indentation gets smaller and smaller, and we measure all that under the microscope, and we come up with numbers. And this is the clinical view, and these are numbers. So this is outside, and that's the mineral content. As we said before, enamel somewhere inside has 85% mineral. But on the control group, outside, it's very low at 40%, and then it comes back. And on the laser, it never goes very low in comparison to the control side. It just loses some, and it comes back. So this is loss on the laser side of mineral, and this is loss on the control side. And you can look all over the teeth. We had 40 patients in there. And you figure out after 4 weeks, you have 46% reduction in mineral loss due to the fact that we irradiated that surface with the laser. And actually, after 12 weeks, we have 87% less mineral loss. So that effect holds on. And it's very interesting. You just can prevent that mineral next to a bracket or somewhere on a tooth gets lost. So we showed, yes, around orthodontic brackets, it works. And up to 87% less mineral loss over 12 weeks. So then we said, well, we can't keep on pulling teeth. We have to do now some treatment in patients where we don't pull the teeth to prove that the system works. So we have to find other ways to figure out that the system works. And that was very difficult, and it took us several years because all the methods are not really sensitive. So in the end, we came up with a study and published that in 2012. We looked with what's called the diagonal dent and measured actually inside of the tooth light coming back, and we can skip that a little bit. So you send light in and light comes back. That's called fluorescence. And that tool measures actually the fluorescence coming back from that fissure and tells you something, how much mineral is lost. And there are numbers out there, so it's easy to measure, but the results are a little shaky. And if you do a study where you want to keep the teeth in, you have to look at different methods, not just one method. So the next method was really a God-given thing. Because at that time, the company came and said, oh, we have a new camera system. We send in strong blue light, and then the dentin body sends back green light. And if there's on the way some bacteria from caries, that sends out red light. It really sounds like whatever magic, but it works. And I did a huge study with those guys. And this is a fissure, and this is with a regular light, the white light, and this is with the fluorescence light. So you really see a lot of things. And we actually created a whole score because we measured 1,064 surfaces and made up a scale and compared that to other things and so on and so on. So, wow. First, I just took it because sometimes you take research because it brings you money and it's not a bad research, but you were not excited. But then somewhere after patient 10, I got so excited, I wanted more and more. I ended up with 100 patients. And you see things like this, and here's some red, and there, the first breaking. Then we use something which is called the International Caries Detection and Classification System. It's a way to look at teeth, honestly, and we looked at the occlusal surface, and it's really what you see with loops and light, and you can see much more. Then you really think. And we are just training our faculty to use that system, to look at teeth differently. I keep on saying they see the cavities, but when you show them that there's a life before cavities, then they start to see lesions which are not cavities, but you see they could be cavities in the future. And so they actually look at teeth now and you all say, there's nothing. And I agree with you, there's nothing. That's code zero. But see this tiny spot here? There must be something, just a tiny bit, and that's called code one. And then you see that mineral loss is going up the slopes here, and that's called code two. So this is the first stage of mineral loss, which typically dentists don't look at, because they look at the cavity, and then they go drill and fill and build. So that's a way to look at teeth. And this is so much loss, well, then you have to think, what do you do? That's a tiny, tiny cavity. And this is my team at that time, and still some of those guys are working with me. And we decided to look at second molars, so the big molars which come with the age of 12 to 14. And this is before laser treatment, this is after laser treatment. And this is a great projection, but I don't think that you see anything here. So the treatment, you almost see nothing. The only thing sometimes, if there's a biofilm, you burn it away, just gone, and then it comes back. And very simple. The green ones are the ones over 12 months, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, which got laser treatment, and that's the ICDAS score. And the blue ones are the ones which did not get laser treatment. And you can make that nicely visual this way. So the blue ones were the ones who did not get any laser treatment, and they got worse over time, every time, highly statistically significant. And the green ones got better over time. You can go really crazy like scientist guys do that, and they come up with a curve that says the same thing. And my crazy comment to that is, well, this is here after 12 months, and then this will be here after 24 months, and then are we growing teeth over time? I don't think so, but you ask that question, what happens after 12 months and what's going on? So, just give you an example of what that SOPO tool helped us, specifically in the fluorescence. So this is our baseline, and this is a control tooth with daylight and that fluorescence, and you see this, and you see this, and this. And this is after 6 months, and that got a little bit bigger, that for sure got a little bit bigger, that really got a little bit bigger. So that tool shows you something. And now here's the laser treated one, and we have this, and we have this, and this is 6 months later. And I did not switch the slides accidentally. And I have slides where we did the pictures immediately after treatment, so we didn't burn it away. It really went away. It remineralized over time. So SOPO Daylife shows the same thing like the IC does. SOPO Fluorescence shows the same thing like the IC does. I don't know what happened here, so... But you see, three different systems showed you the same thing. Something is going on at least. One is getting worse, one is getting better. So, conclusion, with a 9.6, that was the one we used, and very short laser pulses, you can really significantly inhibit the formation of caries lesions in molars. And we did that for the first time in vivo without pulling teeth. And was good for 12 months, and different systems showed us. So that idea got better and better. That we can cut, and something happens to the mineral. And then, let's jump over this. The effect here is now we go into the 85%, and we really melt it if you want to cut it, and then it ejects out, and we have some droplets, and no explosion in that way anymore. So this company came actually 2.5 years ago, and my dean is very respectful of your time, and when you're on vacation, he never calls you, and that's the vacation where he called me. And we were down there in Cambria enjoying the beach, looking on the water, and I got a call, and he says, can't believe that. You, me, I was looking since 20 years for a laser like that, where we could do all that, not just the dermatology test laser. And he's looking for that since more than 20 years. And here's a company calling him up and telling him, we read your papers. What? They read papers that we're really interested in? And actually, we already built a laser like that. We just want you to do the test if you want. And so that's what he calls me. He says, Peter, as soon as you are back, we have to come and make an appointment and get them in here. And he typically does a good thing. He gives everyone 1 hour. And that tells them, well, you have 1 hour. Because then, after 1 hour, they tell you blah, blah. You can say, well, the 1 hour is over. So that 1 hour took 8 hours. They stayed with us, and we discussed studies, and we discussed and discussed. So they made all that technology available. And now we can change the enamel, make it caries resistant. This is melting, but we do it even without melting. Even here, that's a good projection. You can see that tiny melted surface. If you need more, you need to cut a little bit. You have tons of different ways to get very small beams. That's actually the first laser in dentistry cuts down to 250 microns. All the others cut down to 400 or even 700 microns. So it's really, I want micro dentistry. And this is a tiny treatment of a surface. At higher magnification, this is all changed into more caries resistant, and you could put sealants on now or whatever. Okay, if you really need to cut, you can cut with that laser. This is actually the first patient in real who got his teeth treated with that laser. And they have that laser out now at roughly 160 dentists. And the main interesting report is that roughly, if 90-95% of the patients report that they don't want an injection because the vibration of the laser, I assume, we don't know exactly, does a tiny kind of numbing up the teeth. And so that's an interesting thing to follow up. And so in summary, if you have a laser with 9.3 and 9.6, really short pulsed, this guy goes between 3 and 70 microseconds. You can do a lot of things, but it's all safe to ablate enamel and dentin. You can inhibit caries, and you can remove caries, and even you can use that for soft tissue if you want. You just change a little bit the settings. So that's the summary of my presentations, and I'm happy to answer questions. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.